Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Arcadia by Richard F. Wayand, narrated by Derek Scholes. 2245. Arrival. A blue haze developed over the display screen at the front of the passenger container. The blue haze flashed suddenly and was gone. A planet floated in the display, taking up half the display on the left.
"We have arrived at Arcadia," Janice Quant's voice announced.
Perhaps 2 minutes later, gravity abruptly returned. There was a bit of a tremor as the building settled a bit.
"Peggy, look at that," Matt said.
In the display, Matt could see from their location on the top of the residence hall all the way to the horizon. There were coastal grasslands close around them, with some structures in the middle distance Matt recognized as the barns. Well beyond the barns, there was lush vegetation, with some small trees. Some looked like they were laid out in a grid, like orchards. In the far distance, blue-gray mountains marched across the horizon, falling off to the sea in the right side of the display. A cheer went up in the compartment, and there was applause. They had arrived on Arcadia. The return of gravity was a relief. They had been in zero gravity, strapped into their seats for almost 2 hours, since the big cargo shuttle carrying the passenger container had throttled back on reaching orbit. There had then been the transport of the shuttle and its payload by the interstellar probe to the big interstellar transporter. The passenger container had been lashed by the shuttle to the roof of one of the colony buildings, where they had waited until everyone was aboard. Arcadia had been the third planet where the transporter stopped. The interstellar flights themselves were instantaneous, but there was a delay at each planet to transport the colony buildings to the surface. Then the next planet. Then Arcadia. After 4 years of planning and training, they had arrived.
"Hi, everybody. This is Mark Kendall," the voice came from the speakers in the passenger container. "We've arrived, so there'll be no more zero gravity."
The chairman of the Arcadia ruling council paused for the cheering in his container to die down.
"We're here now, and there's no hurry, so let's make it a safe debarkation. There are some ladders and steps to climb down, and we don't want anybody getting hurt, so let's all take our time. It's about 10 o'clock in the morning here, so we've gone back a couple hours from the time zone in Texas. Our only jobs today are to get everybody into their temporary quarters in the colony buildings and to make sure everybody has food and water available. Tomorrow, we're going to start putting up houses and stringing fencing so we can let the livestock out. The livestock is on time release tranquilizers, and they have food for now, but we need to get them out grazing soon. But for today, let's get everybody into temporary quarters. It's going to be crowded, but it won't be sleeping out on the grass like in Texas, so we're moving up one step at a time. Now, I'm going to turn over the intercom to each of the building managers, so they can talk to the passenger compartments on their own buildings."
There was a pause, and then another voice came over the speakers.
"Hi, everybody. If you're hearing me, you're in one of the passenger containers on the roof of the hospital. My name is Magana Khatri, and I'm the administrator of the hospital. I also sit on the council as head of the health department. The first thing is to get everybody a bunk room in the hospital so we all have a comfortable place to sleep tonight. It's going to be pretty Spartan for now, and we're going to be crowded. All the registered groups have been housed together. For the rest of you, think of it as an opportunity to make new friends. We're all in this together, so let's pull together like a team. When you debark the passenger container, take the supplies box under your seat with you. Yes, we're still on rations and bottled water for the moment. We are going to try to get the kitchens up and running in the next few days, but there's a lot of work to do first. Running electric and water from the power plant and septic lines back is an early priority. In the meantime, we're still on MREs and portable potties. With regard to wandering around outside the building, you're free to do that, but stay inside of the building. There are some big wild fauna here, transplanted from Earth, especially some of the big cats. In the daytime, you should be okay, but keep your eyes open. There's safety in numbers, so it's better to stay in groups than to go wandering off by yourself. If you do get in trouble with the local fauna, call the emergency number on your communicator and run like hell for the closest building. Dodge a bit left and right so snipers on the roof can get a clean shot at the animal. It's easier to stay in a big group than to try to outrun a big cat, though, so remember that. With all that said, let's start exiting the containers now and heading down into the building. Our staff people should have been able to get in place while we were talking, and they can help you find your room assignments. Welcome to Arcadia, everybody. Khatri out."
Everybody reached under their seat for their supply box and got them out. Once again, it was a briefcase-sized box with a handle full of bottled water and MREs. Then they waited for the compartment to be opened. Each passenger container had three decks, and the 36 containers had been delivered to the roofs of the four colony residence halls, the generic name for the hospitals, office buildings, administrative buildings, and school buildings, in stacks of two. The hospital staff started emptying the five stacks of people containers on the hospital roof, 30,000 people in all, with the bottom decks of the five bottom containers. That was easiest because no stairs were required. The Chen Yasik clan was seated on the middle deck of the lower container of their stack. When it was their turn, the passenger compartment doors opened and one big fellow with a bullhorn of a voice stepped in. Like everyone else, he wore coveralls and booties, though his were in a size extra large.
"Okay, everybody,"
bellowed Stanley Twardowski, World Authority Police Sergeant Major, retired.
"Grab your supply boxes and queue up. We're just going to start with the front row and work our way back. That's the easiest way to keep groups together. There's one stair ladder to go down to the roof, and it's steep, so we're going to go down it backwards. You all already have your room assignments, and you got all day to get there, so let's take it nice and slow and safe, all right?"
Before they left Texas, Robert Yasik, Chen Li Chang, and Rachel Conroy, as the nominal heads of their groups, had gone to the planet administration table to one side of the planet square, the marked-out open space in which all the colonists for Arcadia were camping out in the grass. There, they had registered their individual groups as being combined into the Chen Yasik group. Yasik's group was 27 people from the suburbs of Raleigh-Durham in the Carolina Administrative Region. Five couples, minus Harold Munson, whom Betsy Reynolds had divorced after another one of his physical abuses, and their total of 18 children, ages 14 to 19, now all paired up as married couples. Rachel Conroy, her partner Jessica Murphy, and their friends Gary Rockham and his partner Dwayne Hennessy were all from downtown Raleigh-Durham. They had met the Yasik group at the shuttleport in the Carolina Administrative Region before the trip to Texas and merged with them, there being strength in numbers. The Chen group was Chen Li Chang and 30 members of his family from rural China. Li Chang was the paterfamilias of the close-knit clan. He and Robert Yasik had negotiated the alliance of their groups on the prairie in Texas, where they awaited transport to orbit. The peasant farmers had wanted to team up with a group with more diverse and modern skills, whereas Bob Yasik and Maureen Griffith had seen the Chen's farming skills as a must-have for their own group. As a result of registering the combination of the groups, the 62 members of the Chen Yasik clan all had room assignments in the hospital together. Two rooms, numbered 427 and 428, presumably on the fourth floor of the large building. They would be 30 or more to a room for now, until the temporary housing was set up, but they wouldn't be out in the rain. Matt Yasik could see his father talking with Chen Li Chang, the grandfather of the Chen household. They both nodded and then each spoke to one of their groups nearby, Chen Li Chang to his eldest son, Cheng Gong Hai, and Yasik to Maureen Griffith. The whisper campaign spread as they stood up and queued for the door.
"Bob and the Chen say we are one group. Do not split into Chinese and American when we get to our rooms. Mix it up. Pass it on,"
Jonah Thompson said to Matt.
"Makes sense," Matt said, and he turned to his wife Peggy Reynolds and repeated the message.
Peggy passed it on to her sister Sally, standing behind her. Then their row was moving, and Matt Yasik followed Jonah to the door. It was about 8 feet down to the roof of the hospital, and there was a steep stair set up, like a ladder on a ship, with two railings to hang on to. Matt turned around, winked at Peggy, and headed down the stairs. He waited for her at the bottom. The weather was very pleasant, and the sun was bright in the sky. He saw an edge of clouds moving off on the horizon. Matt sniffed the air and could smell the ocean, so it was only a few miles distant. He could hear multiple diesel generators running. Matt knew that there was basically no axial tilt on Arcadia, so this would likely be the weather all year round. It looked like one of those special spring days in the Carolinas, when the weather was absolutely perfect. But on Arcadia, that would be the weather every day. There was a staffer waving them toward the stairs.
"Go ahead and down the stairs to your floor. The first digit of your room number is the floor. The lower numbers are at this end, and they go up toward the other end of the building."
They followed the line of people into the rooftop stair enclosure and down into the building. There were lights operating in the stairwell, and they continued down 20 half-flights of the zigzag stairwell until they got to the fourth floor. People were leaving the stairwell into different floors as they descended, but all the members of the Chen Yasik group kept on until the fourth floor. The hallways had lights on, too, but not at normal office levels. They were on at emergency levels,
running off the generator. Matt knew diesel fuel would be precious until they had a refinery built. He thought he remembered that a refinery was one of the first projects for the Meta factory. There were multiple hallways, but signs guided them to which hallway had their room numbers. They followed other members of the clan into one of the two rooms and found the room had five sets of three high metal bunk bed frames in it. There was almost no other furniture, and the bunk beds were crammed into a room that would have another purpose in the future. The one other piece of furniture in the room was a single chair in front of a 3D display projector mounted on the wall. The room was bright with light coming in the large windows, and the lights were off. The sliding windows were actually latched open, which didn't make sense to Matt until he realized the building had been transported from vacuum to a planetary atmosphere. Without the windows being open, they would have blown in. People were settling into Taylor's seat on the floor or sitting on one of the bottom-level bed frames. "Well, we're here," Matt said. "Now what?"
"Why don't we see if there are any announcements on the display?"
Peggy asked.
"Would the network even be up yet?"
Jonah asked.
"And would the display run on the emergency power?"
"One way to find out," Matt said. The big 19-year-old sat in the chair in front of the display. He tried to slide it back, but it was tack-welded to the metal floor. He shrugged and tried to turn on the display. It remained blank.
"Not up yet, I guess," Matt said.
"Well, I know there's work to be done," Jonah said. "I would just as soon get going on it than to be sitting around."
"Work is good," Ming Wei said. "There's much to be done."
At that moment, the display came on by itself. It read, "Announcements" across the screen.
"Huh," Matt said. "I guess I was just a bit quick on the draw."
He scrolled down the list.
"Looks like they're getting mattresses out of the warehouse and distributing them to everyone. They need people for unloading on the dock and then distributing within the hospital. Who's in?"
Matt took a count of hands and then signed them up on the display.
"Okay, it says to report to the docks in half an hour. They're still unloading passenger containers."
"How are they getting mattresses to the docks?"
Jonah asked.
"I guess they had electric trucks charging up in the power plants since Earth orbit, and they just called them to auto-drive over to the warehouse. They're being loaded with containers now."
"How'd they do that with no roads?"
Jonah asked. Matt shrugged.
"Beats me. I guess there was a clear path from the power plant to the warehouse. It's only a couple miles. This has all been so well planned, they wouldn't have missed a bet there."
"Makes sense," Jonah said.
"Let's get a quick bite to eat first," Matt said. "We didn't have any breakfast."
When the display came on in the next room, Robert Yasek motioned Chen Liqiang to the chair, but Chen demurred.
"Please, Robert, be seated. Computers are not my skill."
Yasek sat in the chair and Chen settled into Taylor's seat alongside the chair to watch. Yasek scrolled down the announcements.
"They need manpower at the docks," he said.
"I just came from next door,"
Marine Griffith said.
"Matt and Ming Wei have that covered."
"Okay, good." Yasek kept scrolling. "They have a sign up for property here in the town for houses. We can sign up as a group, and we'll get assigned early because of our size."
"Is there a map?"
Chen asked.
"Yes, I think so," Yasek said. "Yes, here it is."
Yasek selected the map of the colony, and Chen studied it closely. It showed the cluster of major buildings in the center, and then a grid of streets around it, with 10 blocks to the mile. There were 8 or 9 square miles around the downtown gridded out for the 100,000 colonists.
"North is up, yes?"
Chen asked. Yasek looked for the compass indication.
Yes, here it is. North is up."
"And does the sun rise in the east as before?"
"I assume they set north in the standard way, which would be the thumb direction when their fingers point in the direction of rotation of the planet."
Yasek demonstrated with his right hand before continuing.
"So the sun should come up in the east."
Chen nodded.
"And how much land are we allotted?"
Chen asked.
"For 60 people, half a city block. 3 acres, more or less."
Chen raised an eyebrow.
"A bit over a hectare," Yasek clarified. 1.2 hectares, something like that."
"So much? Just for the houses?"
"Well, that's 12,000 people per square mile, so that is a high population density, but yes, that's how much we get in town. And then we all have a share in the farms as well."
Chen nodded.
"And 30 houses?
Chen asked.
"Yes, one for every 2 people, then an extra room on each later." "So how do we arrange the houses, Liqiang? In America, they would be set back from the road, facing it, with a yard in the front and one behind."
"Can I propose an alternative, Robert?"
"Of course.
Put all houses close to road facing in. One big yard in the center. We are one clan. We close in our space. We guard in this space. With teas, with herbs, with spices. We brought the seeds and the cuttings and the tools.
This was the first mention of what the Chen family had used their cubic for, and it made great sense to Yasik. He looked to Marine Griffith standing to one side and watching. Griffith gave him a small nod.
Very well, Li Chang. We will do as you say. And where do we request our space?
Not close to big buildings. We want sun all day, so not close on the south. Anywhere south or out from the center on north, east, or west.
We probably shouldn't be close to the buildings anyway. As the downtown expands, we'll be displaced, and our investment in these gardens will be lost.
Toward the barns, I would think, Griffith said. That will be one place of employment. Animal husbandry is always manpower-intensive, and the Chen are good with animals.
Chen nodded.
Yes, I agree with this, he said. It will be a shorter walk home from work.
Yasik had to get his directions straight. The ocean was to the east, the mountains to the north. The prevailing wind here seemed to be on shore, to the west, based on the morning rain they had watched from the roof moving off to the west. So the barns and fields were north of town. They could locate on the north edge of the residential area around the downtown, and not be downwind of the barns were in the shade of the bigger buildings. Yasik picked a block on a line between the downtown buildings and the barns. It was on the edge of town, a mile and a half or so from the downtown buildings.
About here, Li Chang? He asked.
Yes, Robert. Very good.
Yasik selected the north half of the block and began placing houses, but Li Chang held up a hand.
The south half, please, Robert. We will have neighbors, and we want the sun all day. They may raise something that casts a shadow, and on one shorter side, move the houses back from the street 15 feet.
Move them back on one side?
Yes, for a market. We will sell teas and herbs and spices. East side is sunny in the morning. Bright, cheerful. We put umbrellas for shade, but sunny for market is good.
We can sell lava lavas there too, Griffith said.
Yasik turned to Chen.
Our family brought fabrics. All our cubic is fabric, for making lava lavas.
Chen looked to his daughter Ping Li standing nearby.
Han Fu Chun, she said. I think.
Chen nodded.
Very good, Chen said. We will sell teas and herbs and spices and fabrics.
The uptown market,
Griffith said.
I like it.
But will people come so far to our market?
Yasik asked. Chen just nodded.
They will come. You will see.
Yasik rearranged the request on screen, making it the southern half of a block on the north edge of the initial town map. He marked house locations evenly around the perimeter of the space, about 50 feet apart. All the houses faced into the space, and the row of houses across the eastern edge were set 15 feet back from the building line. Yasik raised an eyebrow to Chen.
Very good, Robert. That is very good. Submit that, please.
The basics. The Chen Yasik work crew got to the hospital's loading dock as the electric truck was backing to the dock. They had a container on it. A 12-foot by 12-foot by 80-foot monster. On the dock were 4 2-seat electric carts with bins on the back.
Chen Yasik crew reporting, sir, Matt said to the fellow who seemed to be supervising. Excellent. Can any of you guys drive a golf cart?
Matt took inventory of hands quickly.
I guess we have 3, sir. All right. I can take the other one. We need to deliver mattresses to everybody throughout the hospital so they have some place to sleep tonight.
How many containers will that be, sir?
Just this one, believe it or not. 34,000 mattresses.
James Folletti walked over to the container and unlatched the rear doors. Inside, stacked 6 across and maybe 100 or 150 high, were plastic vacuum packages. They were 2 feet square and 1 inch thick.
Let's start filling the first couple carts, Folletti said.
That's a mattress, sir?
Yeah, air mattress with foam on one side, scrunched down and vacuum packed. You open one of these, it unfolds and starts expanding like crazy. Then you blow it up the rest of the way. Saves cubic.
Yes, sir. All right, guys, let's get on it.
They loaded 120 or so mattress packages onto each of the first 2 carts. Then Jonah and James Thompson got into the carts.
Don't worry about allotting them out or anything. There's thousands more when we get beds. But if some people want to sleep on the floor so they can sleep alone, that's okay, Folletti said.
Got it,
Jonah said. James and Jonah drove off into the hospital, driving right down the corridor. At the first cross corridor, one turned left and one turned right. Valetti and Joseph Bolton backed up the next two carts, and the remaining crew loaded them up. By the time that was done, Jonah and James were back.
They go fast, James said. Four rooms and you're empty.
Yeah, but it's going to take longer as you go deeper into the building, Valetti said. You got all the rooms you did already to drive past, and you can use the elevators if you use the code for the call button. 5, 30, 7. Try to keep that to yourselves, because we only got so much electric until they wire the building to the power plant.
With that, Valetti and Joseph headed off into the building and their carts, and James and Jonah backed their carts up to the container.
This will take a very long time, Mingwei said. We should get as many on each cart as we can.
But that's how big the box is, Mingwei, Matt said.
We show you.
Matt and Tom and David Peterson concentrated on getting the mattresses out of the container, and Mingwei and the other Chinese stacked them on the carts. They used a fan of mattresses to effectively build the box higher and piled them in. They also filled up the extra passenger seat. In all, they got over 350 of the packages onto the cart.
I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't seen it to myself, Matt said.
Valetti and Joseph returned at that point, and Valetti looked over the next two carts to go in.
Nice job, he said. I was worried about getting everybody on a mattress tonight, but that's going to work great. You guys were right. They go fast.
James and Jonah headed off into the hospital again, and Valetti and Joseph backed their carts up to the container.
We'll actually back them into the container once we get deeper, Valetti said. Still plenty of working room around them.
With that, they settled into a rhythm. It still took over 5 hours to get to the point where the carts came back with mattresses remaining on them.
I think we finally got them all, James said.
Yeah, that's about right, Valetti said. We got about 10% of the container left. We'll hold that here in case we missed anybody, or one of the other buildings comes up short.
He turned to the crew.
Nice job, you guys. Let me scan your communicators. You got wages coming. I make it 6 hours all told.
We get paid? Matt asked.
Oh, yeah. Colony headquarters back on Earth figured there'd be some shirkers no matter how careful they were with rejecting colonists for cause. Well, those guys ain't gonna do as well as guys who ain't afraid to get their hands dirty.
Valetti held up some sort of widget to each of them, one at a time, and they keyed their communicator. That was all it took for him to get their IDs.
All right, you guys. Thanks. We'll see you around.
Matt, Mingwei, and their crews took the stairs back up to the fourth floor. They had the code to the elevator, but they didn't really need it and didn't want to use the limited electric or set a bad example. When they got back to their rooms, there were mattresses on all the beds. Matt couldn't believe it, as the mattresses were 3 to 4 inches thick once inflated.
Maybe tomorrow we'll get sheets and clean coveralls, Peggy said.
What I would really like is a shower, Matt said. But that won't be before the power plant is hooked up. A couple days, probably. At least we aren't sleeping outside like last night.
Last night? Oh, in Texas, you mean? That was just last night? Wow, it seems like 1,000 years ago.
1,000 light years away, anyway.
Becky shook her head.
And now we're here.
She looked out the windows. With no axial tilt, the day here in the subtropics of Arcadia was 12.5 hours long every day, and it was almost sunset already.
Matt, let's go down and outside and see if we can see the sunset.
Matt glanced out the windows.
Okay, but not far from the building. The Night Stalkers will be out as soon as it gets dark. Especially the cats.
There were people camped out on bunk beds in what would be the hospital lobby as well. There was a path to the front door behind what would ultimately be the reception counter. Half a dozen of the couples from the original Carolina group went down, as well as Gary Rockham and Dwayne Hennessy, one of the gay couples they had merged with in the Carolina airport. As they walked through the lobby via the path behind the reception counter, one of the people camped out in the lobby came up to them.
You guys own a group already?
Yeah, we're good. Thanks, Matt said.
Okay, we're trying to get 3 more couples. If we do, we'll get a whole city block of our own on the land assignments.
I'll keep an eye out for you. There should be a group of 3 couples somewhere you can pick up.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Matt thought about it.
You know, I think I saw a personal section link off the announcements page. You ought to put an ad up.
A good idea. Thanks.
Matt nodded and waved, and they passed out the main doors into the night. The hospital building stood on no foundation other than its heavy steel underframe. It was simply set there by the interstellar transporter. There was no infrastructure. No road, sidewalk, parking lot, or other structure or landscaping. For that matter, the hospital itself was all steel with glass windows. iron and silica had been plentiful in the asteroid belt where it was manufactured. Organic molecules, from which much of any decor would be constructed, had simply not been available. In particular, there were no plaster walls or tiled floors or ceramic countertops. The infrastructure, in terms of electrical conduits and air ducts and plumbing pipes, all ran on the exterior of the single-thickness steel walls. The effect was not unlike that of being on a warship, except they didn't even have any rubber deck coverings. All those sorts of niceties would have to wait until the colony could afford the upgrades. In the meantime, they had a roof over their heads and protection from the wild. They stepped off the steel entry portico of the hospital and out from under the steel roof. It was dusk, and it would be dark soon. There was a bit of a crowd around the portico, all taking the evening air of their new planet. Off to the west, the other direction from the ocean, the sky was a blaze of red and orange, with bars of purple clouds.
"Oh, how pretty," Peggy said.
"Just another day in paradise," Matt said.
"Oh, you,"
Peggy said, punching him in the arm.
"It's true, though. With no seasons, this is pretty much how it's going to be all year round."
"Well, that's fine by me. It's beautiful."
Between the emergency lights in the rooms and under the portico, it was light near the hospital, but it got dark quickly as one moved farther away. Peggy was in the light, but moving out toward the darker area.
"Don't straddle the light, Peg."
"Oh, we're fine, Matt."
"Oh, yeah? Look again."
Peggy looked out across a dark grassland, and about 100 yards distant, a pair of large green eyes glowed as they caught the lights behind her.
"Oh, shit."
Peggy scampered back toward the portico.
"Actually, staying here is a real good idea, I think."
"Yeah," Matt said. "We're going to have to let them know this isn't where they want to be. Once the town builds out, it will be okay, I think. They're not going to want to mess with a large population of people. For now, though, you don't want to be a single target."
"What about all these other people?"
"I think I can fix that." Matt cupped his hands around his mouth. "Tiger, in the grass!"
Some people looked out over the grassland, saw those eyes, then sprinted for the building. Others headed back without looking. But everybody pulled back much closer to the hospital, and Matt saw the eyes disappear as the big cat turned and wandered off.
"There he goes," Matt said. "He doesn't want to tangle with all of us, or to come out into the light. He was just looking for easy pickings."
He turned and looked up at the top of the building. There was a rifleman up there, silhouetted against the darkening sky, wearing IR goggles.
One of the building lookouts would probably have gotten them anyway, before he actually took anybody. But let that be a lesson to be careful after dark.
"Jeez, just from the eyes, that thing looked like it was the size of a pony,"
Amy Yasek said.
"For a tiger," Matt said. "That's not far off, actually."
"Why would colony headquarters bring something like that here anyway?"
Peggy asked.
"Because without any predators, the deer population will overrun the place," James Thompson said.
"Yup," Matt said. "They tried to balance the ecology. We'll have to see how well they did over time."
"Well, I think it was exciting to see," Dwayne Hennessy said.
"You would," Gary Rockham said.
"Well, to see it from over here anyway. Why not?"
"Fair enough. It is a good reminder, though. It's a wild planet, not suburban Raleigh-Durham."
They went back upstairs, and with it dark now and the emergency lights on low, they simply went to bed. They had been up a couple hours longer than local time since they had woken up before dawn on the prairie in Texas that morning. That, plus a longer day on Arcadia, about 25 hours, meant they had been up for almost 17 hours. With all the emotion and excitement of the day, they were all pretty beat.
"Well, we're back in the bed," Matt said. "That's some progress."
"Yeah,"
Peggy agreed.
"Maybe tomorrow we'll get sheets for it."
"No telling."
Setting up camp. The emergency lights kicked up to a higher level about an hour before dawn. Matt Yasek was already awake, staring up at the bottom of the bunk above them, listening to Peggy snore softly in his arms. She mewed in protest and looked across to the windows.
"So early? It's still dark."
"All the light is for working. With no axial tilt, it's only light half the day all year long."
At that point, the display projector came on, lighting the room further. The legend, "Work Assignments," was on the screen. Matt disentangled himself from Peggy and swung over the edge of the second-level bunk, then lowered himself to the floor. With no sheets or blankets yet issued, he was still in the onesie coverall he had put on that last night in Texas. He slipped on his booties, then padded over to the display. Others in the room were getting up now. Some were opening their supply boxes and getting breakfast. A couple had slipped down the hall to the portable toilets by the elevators.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?